Welcome to episode 8 of the Kindness Objective podcast. Joining me today is Dan Goodman. Most of you on LinkedIn probably already know who Dan is, but for those who don't, Dan is an employee advocate who is working very hard to support people who are mistreated and aren't necessarily paid well when they leave to no fault of their own. So thank you so much, Dan, for doing this.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm looking forward to it, Melissa. I'm a big fan of you and your message and your mission out there. Absolutely.
Well, we're all a big fan of you. I know I've been following you for such a long time, and every single day I see a story that you post, and just when I think it can't get any worse, it gets worse. So I'm shocked. I just read one today about a lady that was let go, and then they managed to get her out of $80,000 in commission that she was owed.
Yeah, that's going on right now. It just the stories are just endless. The creativity that employers use to treat employees badly and reduce costs and take earned income from their pockets is just, it's just mind boggling. I mean, this person is from the UK. They don't know how the US laws work around severance. They were let go. They were told they had about $80,000 in commission that were due. They went to HR and said, hey, I'm going to get paid this commission out, right? They sent them an email back confirming they'd be paid. They sent the severance agreement. She signed it and then said, hey, where's my 80K? They said, you signed the severance. We owe you nothing. I mean, it's unbelievable.
That
so
is
she's going to escalate that to the CEO and see if he'll step up and do the right thing here.
That's horrible. And now with you being an employee advocate and knowing so much that I don't know, if the work was already done, wouldn't that be considered compensation owed and illegal to not give her that money? Or am I missing something?
No, I mean, variable compensation, for some reason, there are no laws in place that make it black and white. When it comes to base wages, it's very clear and cut and straightforward, and the employers know that, and there's an obligation to pay it, and there's clear penalties if you don't. For some reason, with variable compensation, it's sort of up for grabs, depending on when the company realizes it, depending on when it's typically paid, how it's laid out in your employment agreement or in your compensation plan. For some reason, commissions and variable compensation are open for manipulation by employers when they choose to. So I say that you got to document everything. Yeah. Have the evidence of how much time you put into the work that you were doing, get the comp plan, get the employment agreement, know the laws in your state, because the laws vary from state to state. Just because your employer says it doesn't make it right and doesn't make it so. So that's where a lot of people fall down, is that they blindly trust authority figures like lawyers, like doctors, like religious figures, like your employer. And there's good and bad in every walk of life. And you cannot blindly trust folks and, you know, end up getting screwed over as a result of it.
You're absolutely right. And one of the things that you say is so true, that people do trust, like, well, this is coming from HR, that I am not getting that money and I signed it away. It must be true, because the people relaying this message to them are saying it with such confidence that, oh, it must be true. And that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah. And I say it just as confidently, if not more, to my clients, and empower them to stand up to it in a very strong way. I mean, a lot of times the employer views the employee in a certain way, having been a subordinate and subservient to them for so long. Once you're no longer an employee, you owe them nothing. You should be looking at them on an equal par and not do what they say because they say it. Question things. You should question things all the time in life, not just when you're no longer an employee, not in any aspect of life.
Absolutely. And that kind of ties into what we're trying to do here with TKO, which is battling the cruelty and the toxicity in the workplace. So talking about that a little bit, I've seen so many stories from people that you've consulted with where they are facing adversity in the workplace, which we like to call it bullying, but honestly what it is really abuse in the workplace. Let's call it what it is. And then as soon as they start to speak up about something, or they do start to ask questions, they're thrown on a PIP that has no actual bearing on their performance. It's just a PIP to get them out the door because they're speaking up against the toxicity in the workplace. What are your suggestions for people in those situations?
I mean, the first thing is to document everything. I always tell clients that there's two ballparks. There's the employer's ballpark and there's your ballpark. And the employer's ballpark is what they want you to think and believe, right? You're an employee at will. You've been on a PIP or not. Your performance is no good. You know, we're going to let you go. And you're lucky if we give you any severance at all. You better run to the bank and cash the check before we change our mind. That's sort of the mindset that they brainwash people, that they can do whatever they want to. In reality, you know, the employers want to tie off any loose ends. They want to have every employee sign a release, a separation, a severance agreement. Once you do, you release them of all claims you could ever have, past, present, future, known and unknown. You give up any rights you have to sue them over anything. Yeah. So they're willing to pay you a decent chunk of money just for that signature on a release of liability. By its nature, it should be something that's negotiated. So this is a farce that employers put on employees. And it's not just with severance. It's across the board in almost every aspect of the relationship. Whether, you know, your comp plan that they tell you that you need to sign it. But yet in the back of the agreement says that one side can change the terms anytime they want for any reason they want, with or without notice. That's nothing legal or binding about that. But they give the impression that it is. The same thing with severances. They give you these deadlines that you must sign it by a certain time frame. They use that to coerce you, to pressure you, to want to sign it before you're ready, or maybe to not stand up and negotiate a better offer. And they dangle this money over your head with this false deadline when you have no income coming in. It's a very one-sided situation. You know, they write these legal documents that lawyers have prepared for the sole purpose of benefiting the employer. You don't understand half of what it says, and now you're coerced to sign it. It's just so human resources, folks. They've been doing this. They go to school for this. They study this. They train this. They do this every day. Employees, they've never experienced it before. The entire situation is so one-sided, so stacked against the employee and in every way. And I'm trying to shed a light on this and balance the scales and provide fairness for all.
I'll tell you, until I met you through LinkedIn and I started following you, I didn't know any of this. I thought severance was like, oh, they're just being kind because they let me go and they're trying to help me out. And I had no idea what severance really was about. And when I was laid off after following you on LinkedIn, I said, hold up a second, because I had gotten offered like a 2-week severance. And this, I can't say which company, but it was a company I've worked for over the past, I'll say 4 years, right? And I said, wait a second, no, that's not right. And I do have the opportunity here to negotiate this. And if it wasn't for you, honestly, I would have taken that 2-week severance. So I thank you myself personally, but just to let you know that, you know, even when people might not necessarily be an actual client, you're still helping people just by spreading the information and giving people the awareness of what this actually looks like and what actually this is. And really what it is, it's an NDA. They want you to shut up and go away. They don't want you to talk about what goes on in their environment. And they're willing to give you a dollar amount to do that. And most of the time, this is my personal opinion, and I'm going to ask you if this is true. I would imagine the more toxic the environment is, the more money they're willing to pay you to go away and not talk about it.
Yeah, so there's been an old trick in place forever that the thought here is that severance is intended to buy your silence. And in reality, it's not the case. The NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board, in February of 2023, passed a ruling that severance does not buy silence, that you have your legal right to share your truth, whether you sign a severance agreement or not, that non-disparagement agreements are no longer allowed to be included in severance offers. But yet they still show up all the time. And it's because it's all about taking action, that you need to stand up for your rights. You need to know what rights you have. You should not be bullied and intimidated by employers telling you how things are, when in reality, they may or may not be the truth. So you have no obligation to hide your truth. If your employer treated you poorly and you feel compelled to warn others that this is how they do things, you have every right to do so. What we want to do is have the employers feel motivated to want to make the employees advocates and not adversaries, treat them with respect and dignity and transparency when it's time to let them go, so that the employee feels good about their time there, feels good about how they were treated when they were let go, and now will advocate for the company about what good folks they are. I mean, I was let go way back when. It couldn't have gone better. I mean, and I've posted about this many times, that this is how separations and termination should happen, rather than this BS with these PIPs that just waste everyone's time. You know, you go on a pre-PIP and then a PIP, HR is involved, your manager's involved, they're micromanaging you to death, all for the purpose of wanting you to leave, to disrespect you, to rip your dignity out, to say, I don't deserve this. And now you leave on your own. It doesn't cost the company anything. They have no separation costs, which was exactly what their goal was in the first place. So you need to stand up to the wrongdoing. You need to call it out. You need to know what your rights are, have a strong voice, and let them know what it will look like if they're unwilling to be fair and reasonable, what your rights are, what options you have in front of you, what you could pursue, and to motivate them to say, hey, Melissa is you know, she's not full of baloney here. She's laid out a really strong, compelling case of wrongdoing. It appears what she's got to say could clearly be reputationally damaging to us based on how we treated her, but everything she's saying is truthful. They can't touch you. You have every right to speak your truth. You have no obligation to hide wrongdoing by the employer, and they cannot hide behind severance agreements any longer.
So that's an interesting thing. I didn't know that. But let's say an employee signs a severance agreement, and in there it's got that, you know, silence clause, as I like to call it, and you sign it. Are you bound by it because you signed it, or is it not legally binding due to this passing in 2023?
So that's a great question that you ask, and it really applies to all restrictive clauses, not just non-disparagement, but non-competes, non-solicits across the board. It's the employer's obligation to have these enforced, not yours to abide by them necessarily. They can often write these clauses so one-sided and unfair that no courts would ever enforce them. They write these intentionally so that way, so that they're so scary, they're so one-sided that an unknowing employee will say, my goodness, this non-compete or this non-disparagement or what have you that I'm under is so restrictive, I wouldn't dare try to go to a competitor. I wouldn't dare try to solicit an employee or a prospect to my new employer. But you know, that's the employer doesn't want to pay money to go to court to hire an attorney to then start to enforce it. They'd rather write them so one-sided that no one would bother to ever try or question or challenge it. So when it comes to non-disparagements, it's up to the employer to enforce it. You can talk all you want. I mean, I wouldn't like, you know, give an opinion. I wouldn't like, you know, say nasty things about them, but you can certainly share what you personally experienced. You can't give out trade secrets. You can't give out confidential information about their strategies or about their sales tactics or clients or products and things like that. But what you personally experienced as an employee and how you were treated by that employer to feel the need to warn others so that they don't experience the same horrific behavior, you have every right to do so. And if you have any questions about it, go speak to an attorney and see what they tell you.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That's great to know. I think with everything that you put out there, I know that I personally learned something new, and I know you've got like 40 something thousand followers. So that's a lot of people that you're reaching and spreading this knowledge to, which is amazing and needed. So I applaud you for that. I think it's interesting that you bring up the non-compete. We know that that ruling just came and now they're trying to appeal that. But you know, there are certain companies that they're very much in a specific niche, and there isn't really a lot of opportunity to go somewhere and find another role. So you can't tell someone that they don't have the right to earn a living because they work in a very niche industry. You can't tell someone that, right? I know when I left Verion, they tried to tell people that they had a 4-year non-compete, which first of all, wasn't true. And second of all, was ludicrous at best. No one's going to listen to that.
Yeah, anything over a year, frankly, isn't really enforceable, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of my take on that.
And even in a year, it's probably not enforceable, depending on, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into that, like how big is the industry that you're in?
There's five states right now where it's completely banned, where non-competes aren't allowed. What really bothers me the most about non-competes is like, it's like you've terminated the employee and now you want to stop them from working somewhere else. You've deemed them not worthy to work with you, but you want to block them from getting employment somewhere else because they're that valuable. It doesn't make sense. In Massachusetts, there's a garden leave act regarding non-competes where if the employer wants to enforce it, they have to pay 50% of their wages for as long as they want to enforce the non-compete, up to a year.
Wow.
So I think that's just a fair thing. If you deem me so valuable that I can't work for a competitor and you don't want me to work for you anymore, then you need to pay me to not work for that competitor, not enforce demands on me that go against basic human rights and freedoms and everything else.
Absolutely. I love that.
And the other thing too, that doesn't make any sense. It's like you call us employees at will. You want to put these restrictions on us. You want to say that we can't just, that you can terminate us anytime you want, but then at the same time, you want to restrict our movement to work somewhere else. They just seem to be in direct conflict with each other.
They are in direct conflict with each other completely.
Yep. So it's just more of that sort of one-sided nature that exists between the employer and employee, that the laws have been in place from the beginning of time. that favors one over the other, and the employee has been stuck suffering in this situation for generations.
Interestingly enough, between the severance, you know, arguments that people have with their employers and then, you know, the non-competes and all of that, I find, and I've had a lot of people reach out to me directly through TKO that are in abusive situations at work with really an incredibly hostile work environment, literal abuse at work, and they feel trapped. It's like being in an abusive relationship and they can't get out because of finances. It's no different with being trapped in that situation at work, but they feel legally limited in their ability to leave and find something else that's going to be healthy for them. And so do you work with people who have not been released from a job yet, but are dealing with situations like that? And if so, what does that look like for you?
Yeah, no, we work with folks. If you were terminated and you were offered a severance, we can help you negotiate a better one. If you've been put on a bogus PIP and you don't want to deal with it and you don't want to resign and shoot yourself in the foot, I can help you bring this to a head and show the employer the environment that you worked in, how unfair and wrongful it was, what options you have in front of you, and why it's in the best interest of both parties to resolve this and have an amicable separation with a severance. If you're working in a toxic environment and you want to get out and your employer is not looking to get rid of you, you haven't been terminated, you haven't been offered a severance, you're not on a PIP, but it's unhealthy for you to be there, I absolutely coach and advise folks based on their situation and their desired outcome on the best way to bring that to a head and show the employer why it's in both parties' best interest to resolve this amicably and have a mutually satisfying separation.
So you do help people get out of that situation without financially putting themselves in a hole so that they have time to find something else and focus on something that's going to be healthy for them.
Absolutely. What we do is the first few questions I ask is, what is your desired outcome? Do you want to leave? Or do you want to stay? Do you want to move to a different part of the company? Do you want to just get away from this manager? If you do want to leave, do you want to leave right away because your mental health is suffering? You got to get away from these folks. Are you waiting for a one-time event to happen, like a large bonus or a commission payout or some stock equity vest to happen that you want to try to hang on for a short period or period of time? So whatever that desired outcome is, whenever you want to time that exit. Now, the next question I ask is, can you afford to be without a job? Do you have a safety net? You know, how long do you think it will take you to get a job based on your prior experience looking for a job? And if the answer is I can't afford to, then what we do is we start to build up a case and we start to document everything. And then you're looking for that job because there's always a chance that when you bring this to a head, the employer can be foolish and then just end up retaliating further and turn around and terminate you. Well, that may help your case down the road, but it leaves you scurrying. You have no income. You're shell-shocked. You want to anticipate any potential negative outcomes and be prepared for them so you're not shooting yourself in the foot. So, you know, what I tell folks is that, you know, if you can't afford to be without a job, then the first thing you need to do is go find that job. Delay the start date as long as you can. And then don't necessarily resign, but bring these issues to a head now that you were afraid to do so previously in fear of retaliation and losing your job. Now that you have another job to fall back on, you can aggressively go after it, make some strong claims of mistreatment and wrongdoing, and with the threat of public exposure, and escalate this to the CEO and C-suite and the board of directors if need be. I mean, the board of directors, their reputation is on the line. They've trusted their name and reputation with the leadership. And if leadership is not doing right and doing wrongful, illegal, harmful things to them, if I'm a board member, I want to know about that because that's reflective of me.
I agree with you on that. If I were a board member, I would want to know also. And I've often said, like when I was with Verion, I used to talk with friends that were colleagues that were also struggling there with the same toxic leadership. And we were like, man, if the board ever knew what this leadership was actually doing, they'd be gone in a second. But when we did inform the board of the things that were happening, we all were let go. So that was something I didn't expect. And you would think that the board's reputation would be more important to them than anything, but sometimes it's not. So, you know, again, documenting everything and building that case, because if you don't document everything, and I learned this the hard way, I started documenting things. And I think that, you know, they caught on to that. And so it was like, let her go, get her out of the system as quick as possible, so she doesn't have any of that data. Yep. And so you have to document it as it's happening, because the minute they catch on to the fact that you are documenting things and building a case, they're going to kick you out of your computer and you're going to be looking at a Slack screen that you can no longer access. That's what they do.
Yeah, no, I always tell people to have their antennas up all the time to anticipate the worst and be pleasantly surprised when it doesn't happen. When I tell you about these two ballparks, well, you know, there's their ballpark and your ballpark, but what you want to do is identify what's going on behind the scenes, read between the lines, you know, look between the cracks, and there's things that, you know, maybe think meetings that you're excluded from, or an attitude that your manager has that was different than before. And you want to identify when these changes are taking place, why they're taking place, and put those antennas up and start gathering up your information, start building that case. So many people come to me and say, oh man, I was, you know, locked out of my system. It was bricked. I wish I had all this information. I've got such a strong case to go back at them with, but they've got nothing right now. Yeah. So I tell them to anticipate the worst, get your employment agreement, get your comp plan, get your restrictive clauses, get your stock plan, get any equity grants that you've been given, get your performance reviews, get your Rolodex. How's that for an old expression? Get the folks, you know, they may try to block you once they terminate you from escalating this to leadership. So you don't know their email addresses or their phone numbers or their administrator's contact information. So HR will block you. They'll send you off to legal. They'll tell you that you can only talk to them. The CEO may not even know what's going on here. So get that information, be able to contact. Let me give you one quick story. I had someone reach out. They gave 2 weeks notice, okay, directly to the, I don't know if it was the CEO or HR or whatever it was. And they turned around and fired him on the spot. And this guy was with no pay. And the company, you know, asks out of a courtesy to provide 2 weeks notice so that there's a transition. And what I did, I've done posts about this and polls about this, and about a third of the people who give notice don't end up getting any of that time. They're immediately terminated. So this guy reached out to me and was like, you know, I really was counting on this money. I need this money. It was worth like $6,000 to him for those 2 weeks of pay. And he says, what can I do? So I said, go directly to the CEO and make them aware of what's going on. So he did it in kind of a nice way. And the CEO ignored him and dismissed him and said, whatever. And then the guy came back to me and said, hey, Dan, it didn't work. So I said, all right, well, I shared with him some verbiage, a couple paragraphs I told him to say, and basically let the CEO know that he's shocked and disgusted with how he was treated. It's so petty and pathetic that they treat loyal employees like this when all he was doing was providing them the courtesy that they asked for in the first place. And now they turn around and harm him for it. So we basically let him know that we feel compelled to warn others who may be interested in providing notice that this company is just going to turn around and terminate you. And if you were counting that money, you might not want to give any notice. So when he shared that with the CEO, he was paid for the 2 weeks in full immediately.
It's ridiculous that you have to threaten people in order to have them do the right thing.
And I don't really look at it as threatened. I look at it as exposing wrongdoing so that others are not harmed by it.
Better way of saying it. And it's still sad, though, that you have to talk about how you're going to expose things that are not ethical in order for people to do things that are ethical. Just do what's right in the first place. Why is that so hard for these companies?
Yeah, I mean, they attack on women, you know, pregnant women, people on maternity leave, coming back 2 days later and being put on a PIP, having your job change when you get back, walking away with a pipeline worth $1 million, coming back to an empty one. Even if you've got deals that are about to close, there's this thing called being in the seat. Okay, which is just outrageous. So basically, I'm a rock star female rep. I've been knocking it out of the park for a decade. I make a ton of money, top rep. Now I'm going to go have a family and I'm going to go on leave. I got 5 deals. They're going to close in the next 30, 45 days that'd be worth $200,000 in commission to me. I don't get that commission. I get a portion of it because I'm not in the seat. So someone else is going to come in, close these deals that are really just taking orders at this point,
right?
That I've worked on for 6 or 12 months or longer, and I'm going to give up 25 or 50% of my commission and hand it over to this rep who's done nothing but receive it, who, oh, by the way, happens to be a male like 19 out of 20 times.
Absolutely. Every time, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's shocking to me that there are no protections in place regarding variable compensation for pregnant women or mothers returning to work from a maternity leave, and that they're going to just have this money taken from them. That, but for the pregnancy, I would have earned this, but now that I am pregnant, I'm going to experience this financial loss. How can this be?
That's horrible. And I know exactly what you're talking about. It's like kind of like where similarly when a sales leader will change your territory and all of a sudden, like you've spent 6, 12 months building up a pipeline, things are going to be coming to a close. And it's like, well, You have 30 days to close it or you have to give it to the other person because we're changing your territory. It's similar to that.
Yeah.
And again, it's so unethical and there's no reason for it. There's absolutely no reason for it. Where, at what point did someone say it's a great idea to hurt someone for having a baby or, you know, it just doesn't make any sense.
So I it never made sense to me at all. And it still doesn't, but I finally heard a wrongful rationalization about it. And not only did I hear it once, I heard it twice from different places that an older male CRO and a CEO pressures the mothers who are going on maternity leave to not come back. They literally tell them like, oh, you're going to go off and have a baby and raise your family. You're not coming back anyway. Right. And they're like, of course I'm coming back. Of course I'm coming back. I mean, so the line that I heard was at a C-suite meeting that was told to me by one of the members is that they view women who are coming back from having a baby as damaged, that the act of giving birth has damaged their brain and their mind, that they are a shell of themselves. I literally have heard that said, not personally said to me, but repeated by people who have witnessed that being said two different occasions by two different C-suite leaderships at two different companies.
Wow. And were they male? I'm just curious.
They were male.
They were male. Yeah.
All these women are being targeted. I've worked with a couple of dozen women who've been wrongly treated while on leave, before on leave, while on leave, after returning. And I just could never understand the targeting. And this is the mentality that drives this thought process. It's unbelievable.
That's the most idiotic thing I think I've maybe yet have heard from you about the people you've consulted with. Because every day I read something and say, that can't possibly be. And then you say something like that and I'm shocked all over again. I can't
It's in my queue for posts to come out over the next couple of weeks. It's already written.
I will be looking forward to reading the whole thing, but that's absolutely insanity. Like, oh, your brain is damaged because you had a baby?
The way that I look at it, man, I look at it that these women are warriors, that they have gone through hell and back, that they have done what most men probably couldn't even do in terms of delivering a baby. And now they're managing their family, their work, their household, and everything else. I mean, these women are amazing, and they should be treated that way, not looked at as lesser because they're raising a family.
Did you see the posts on LinkedIn maybe a week or two ago? This lady posted that she was in her final stage of the job interview she was in.
Yes.
You saw this, right? And they like gave her an offer, a verbal offer. And then she said, you know, what are the maternity benefits because she was pregnant? Yeah. And they retracted the offer. You saw this.
Yeah.
What would your advice be to someone who, and I don't know if you deal with this, but somebody who's in the job market and is at that stage in an interview process where a verbal offer is made and then retracted once they find out that they're pregnant?
Well, I mean, this whole thing with verbal job, even if it's a written job offer, I mean, to go after it is not legally, while you may have a legal claim and a right, it's not worth it. You're not going to find an attorney who'll do it. If you are going to find an attorney, make sure that they'll be willing to do it on a contingency basis rather than hourly, because they're just going to stack up the hours and all of a sudden you're $2,000-$4,000 into it and you're nowhere further along. Yes, they have done wrong. Yes, they've broken the law. Proving it and getting to the point where you'll get paid out on it is rarely ever worth the effort. What I would tell folks, sadly, personally, is to not disclose the pregnancy.
Yeah,
is that I would tell people. And it's shameful that that's the case. I have worked with a client about 6 months ago. They were terminated while pregnant from a very well-known place that people admire on LinkedIn. And they came to me. I provided some guidance and assistance, and they were shell-shocked. And they felt that it was really important for them to be honest and transparent because, you know, obviously they're showing their pregnancy at this point.
Right.
You know, a lot of these are Zoom calls and things like that, and initial meetings. And they're like, no, I'm going to be honest and forthcoming and share it. And I want to go to a place that embraces it, welcomes it, and supports women. And this person ended up finding a wonderful job at a wonderful place. Couldn't be happier. And I think that that's a little bit, frankly, a bit of the outlier, frankly. I'm sorry to say that.
Yeah.
So if you're, my wife, when she had our first child, she changed jobs. She was always in, you know, very, very muscular, very fit. So she was never showing the pregnancy till almost 6 months.
Wow.
But yet she joined there at, you know, at like a month, you know, 2 months pregnant. and never told anybody. And finally, people started whispering, and then she told them. Back then, there was like no real formal protections around maternity leave. It was optional. There was no guarantees. You know, if you were in sales, I mean, you were taking a day or two, you know, and that's just how it worked.
So a day or two, I can't even imagine taking a day or two. And I had my son, boy, I was a C-section. So I was hurting for weeks. And then there's no sleep. If you've had children, you have children, you know, you're not sleeping. I remember when I first went back to work after my son was born, I had a backpack cooler full of Monster Zero. And my friend at work said, that's going to give you a heart attack. You can't drink all that. I said, listen, I've already had like seven of them and I still can't keep my eyes open. Trust me, they're not going to give me a heart attack. They're not even working. But
you're still hearing stories today of discrimination around pumping in the office.
No.
I spoke to someone last week about it. There are basic laws in place in all offices that are requiring accommodations for women just for this. And they're employers violate employees' rights and laws all the time. It's just like when a tree falls in a forest and no one was there to hear it, did it make a noise?
Yeah.
If we don't stand up to the wrongdoing, call it out, hold them accountable for it, it's not only going to continue, not only are they going to get away with it, it's going to continue to happen. And we're enabling it to do so because we're making it financially beneficial to them to continue to do the wrong thing.
When you talk about the fact that someone may not have a nest egg and they don't have the ability to be without a job, and especially in this job market, which is one of the worst I've seen in my lifetime, it does really make you want to say to people, listen, save whatever you can and have some sort of security that if you're in a situation like this, where literally going to work at the beginning of the day makes you want to have wine for lunch because it's that bad, you have to protect yourself. And the only way to do that is to have some sort of financial independence. And if you don't have it now, that's okay, but start working toward that so that you don't ever have to stay in a situation like that, because that is typically why people stay and don't say anything. They're scared.
Yeah. I mean, there's a few things you need to do. You need to, you know, hopefully come up with a backup plan so that all of your income isn't reliant on one place, right? So that's a good thing. You also want to be developing your network on a regular basis and not just when you need them, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what I would do is I would go target, you know, three or four or five companies that would be like your dream job to want to go work at. And it doesn't even matter if they have an opening, just like develop a relationship, a rapport, you know, allow for you to be on their radar, you know, proactively reach out and say, hey, you know, I'm happily employed right now. I admire your company. I've been watching you from afar for some time. And in the future, if an opportunity were to come up, I would be very interested in being considered for that. You know, and then just kind of follow up every couple of months and drop a note to that person, send them an article of something interesting that they would like. You know, just, you know, be kind, be proactive, take action, differentiate yourself, stand out. So I would say, like, don't be blindsided by a wrongful termination or believe a bogus PIP and work your butt off and then not be looking for a job and then be terminated when you beat the PIP anyway. Like, always be working at improving yourself, making connections, developing relationships, building out that network, and having options to fall back on. So when you need it, they'll be there for you.
That's spot on, because you see people right now on LinkedIn and they don't have any sort of network. They've never really done the network thing and they're out of work and they're in a panic. Whereas when I was laid off, I had so many people reach out to me and say, like, I know somebody who would love to talk to you about a role. You'd be great in it. And it was coming to me. And then of course I made the decision to just focus on the kindness objective full time, because like you, I want to help people. I want to help people that are in these toxic environments. I want to help kids that are struggling in school so that they don't, I mean, there's 5 kids in a week that ended their own lives. Yeah. 2 of them were 10. So I decided this is what I want to do. When you talk about what is your dream job, this is it for me. And what you're doing is it for you. And sometimes if you have the ability to follow your passion and turn it into a business that you can sustain yourself, but also do something that you love, you don't always have to go back to the corporate environment. There are other options outside of that too. If you have the resources to do it, I say do that all day long.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm so fortunate that I can earn a living doing this, and I'm impacting people every day. I know you mentioned something earlier about, you know, that you might not even be aware of the people who just read your content out there. I'm getting, like, I don't know, well over 20 DMs every week from people thanking me for the post that went out, telling me that they're afraid to even drop a like or comment on it because their employer monitors their LinkedIn, and thanking that it's changing lives, it's changing perspectives. I'm hearing stories about how they've taken some of my advice and negotiated severances or negotiated employment agreements or challenged things. And every day that I read one of those things, I'm just so grateful for the opportunity to be able to help people like this.
And it really validates what you're doing too, right? Yeah. I know for myself, with TKO being such a new thing for me, every once in a while you get that, am I crazy to be doing this and trying to do my own thing outside of the status quo? Because I'm 46, and for the last 30 years of my life, you've had it drilled into your head, get the benefits, get the pension, you know? And so to do something outside of that can be scary. And when I have those moments of self-doubt that seep in every once in a while, I'll get a message from someone that really like drives home, like, no, this is something you need to be doing. And for me last week, you probably saw my post about that young man who reached out with autism, and he was planning to take his own life to raise awareness about the bullying and toxicity that he experienced. And that was what he felt would be his best option, would be to take his own life to honor a young girl who did the same because she had gone through the same thing being autistic. And that was his plan. And I was literally at baseball camp with my son, and I was putting together these little TKO goodie bags and in the cafeteria while he was out there doing baseball. And I was shaking like a leaf. I was like, oh my God, what do I do? I found his grandmother on Facebook, and I reached out, I called her, and I was like, hey, I just got this message from your grandson. And she made sure he was safe with his family. But it was like in that moment where you're having some self-doubt, and then something huge happens like that, and you're just, you know, it gives you the fire you need to keep pushing forward. So
that is so incredible. I'm so moved. I'm literally getting chills listening to you tell me that right now.
Yeah, it was.
Thank you for that. You are truly amazing.
I'm trying to help people, and
One at a time.
Yeah. I walked out of the. I literally was like crying after I got the grandmother on the phone, and here I am at baseball camp, and I'm like, I got to get myself together. And I walked into the hallway, and the lady that was sitting out there doing, like, you know, when the kids get picked up, she signs them out. I said, can I talk to you for a minute? Like, I need to calm down. And I was like crying. She's like, what's wrong? Is your son okay? I said, no, everything's fine, but I just need to talk through something. And I didn't even know this woman. She was so nice. And we chatted for a few minutes, and then I was all right. But you know, when you hear things like that, and you know that this happens every day, you have to keep going. You have to.
It's tough. I mean, you have to compartmentalize. I mean, I was on a call with someone for a paid 30-minute call yesterday, and 29 minutes of it was just straight tears.
You know, really?
Just so traumatized, could hardly. I mean, this woman had a base salary of $375,000, worked at every of the largest, most impressive, $500 billion tech giants that we all know and love. I don't know if we love them, but we all know them. just hearing her experiencing the ganging up, the gaslighting, the systemic discrimination and targeting that she personally experienced, and she just couldn't keep it together. It breaks your heart to hear the pain that people are suffering through just to show up and do a job every day.
Yeah, it's terrible. I years ago was in a very, very abusive situation with a boss that this was before COVID. Remote work wasn't really, you know, an option for most people, but I had found a remote option. And as a single parent with a kid going into kindergarten, I was driving 5 hours a day round trip to go to work, to daycare and work. And I said, once he starts kindergarten, I can't do that. He's going to get off the bus, or I'm going to pick him up at school. What am I supposed to do? So I needed remote work. Yeah. And this manager that I worked for was the most abusive person. I'll never forget. The first time I met him was a month after I started, and we had to go to Chicago for a meeting, and he wouldn't say hello to me, wouldn't speak to me. And I thought, this is really weird. Like, what the hell is this? Right. And so that same manager every day made sure to remind me, like, you know, you really need a remote job. Like, you have a kid, right? And it was all targeted, and it broke me down to a shell of a human being. And I'll never forget the day I called our EAP, and I could barely speak because I had been beaten down over and over and over again by this person to where I felt like everything I said was stupid.
Yep.
And I doubted, like, am I making sense? It was terrible. And the lady on the EAP said, you have to get out of that situation. And she put me in touch with someone. They put me out on medical leave. because it was so bad. So that's another option too. So if you're not looking to like leave your job, or if you don't have a nest egg or something like that, if it's truly, if the abuse is truly that bad, you can take medical leave.
Absolutely. Yeah. I want to talk to that as well, but I also want to talk about the abuse. What you need to do, I look at it like the straws on a camel's back. Like each item individually may not be enough to, you know, move the needle, or, you know, but when you look at it collectively and you start documenting, you know, the treatment and the way that you're spoken to and the disrespect, what I would do is start building that case from day one. Every time that you are made to feel uncomfortable, you are isolated, you are picked on, you are yelled at, you are bullied or intimidated, write it out. Make a journal with a paragraph each time. And when all of a sudden you've got 30 of these piled up, it's overwhelming. And now you can go and bring this to human resources, file a formal complaint against this person, talk about the toxic bullying environment that exists here, that they've allowed to continue to go on, they've encouraged, they've enabled. And when you do that, it's overwhelming. When people just kind of go up and, you know, say, hey, I'm being mistreated, this guy said that, it's just so easy for HR to dismiss it, and they do it almost every time. You need to build your case almost like a lawyer or a private investigator from the bottom up, and do it from the beginning and look at the overwhelming evidence of the situation to support your strong claims.
Yeah. And sometimes HR still will not do anything about it, but you have a much better shot if you have it backed up with documentation and things that you can say, this is a consistent thing. Because again, when we talk about abuse and bullying, having somebody say something that's not kind to you one time does not really suffice, but it's a consistent behavior. And so when you can show that consistent behavior, even if they say, well, we disagree with your claims about it, of course they're going to say that. They know that it's true. And they know if you go and you get a lawyer for it, that lawyer is going to tear them to shreds and say, how can you possibly deny what is going on here?
Yeah. I mean, that's what we do. We build out these strong documents that are very cumbersome, reflective, therapeutic, and it lays out the entire situation. It shows the human impact that their actions have. You know, I focus not just on legality of being a non-lawyer. I focus on empathy in the court of public opinion. We let them know that we have every right to share how we've been treated. We let them know how impactful and horrific their actions have impacted you. We seek empathy. We seek the threat of sharing the truth and not hiding the wrongdoing that they've done that we have no obligation to do. We show them why it's in their best interest to make you an advocate and not an adversary when they're letting you go. I mean, employers should, when they want you, they make you want to feel like you're a part of it. They, you know, they'll tell you whatever they recruit you. But now for some reason, when they're done with you, you just don't matter anymore. I mean, a good leader, someone who cares about people, they'll treat you with more respect and dignity and care when they're letting you go than when they're trying to recruit you to come on.
Very hard to find.
I don't know if they exist.
Yeah, it's very hard to find, but everything that you're saying really puts people in a position when they accept a role to look for these things, look for these red flags. If and when you start to see them, keep a record of it. Make sure that you're protecting yourself, because if you wait and you say, okay, this has been going on for 7 months, you don't have 7 months worth of data at that point. You're not going to be able to go back and pinpoint when did this happen, what exactly happened. You have to keep it down. You have to write it down.
Yeah, you don't want to come up with it after they already have done something to you, because now you're responding to that and it looks like you're making it up, or if it wasn't a concern before, why is it a concern now that we put you on a PIP, or now that you have a complaint about your manager, right?
Right.
So exactly.
Yeah. Well, I think that what you're doing is amazing. You know that. I tell you this a lot. And I really enjoy your content. And I'm looking forward to hearing, more horror stories, but I'm interested to see what future horror stories you hear and share. But you are raising a lot of awareness and really giving people education on things that most people don't have. So I think what you're doing is great. And I appreciate you coming on here and talking about it. And just keep doing what you're doing, because you're changing lives and you're making changes in the workplace. And we certainly do need that.
Thank you so much, Melissa. It was a pleasure being on here. Your words mean so much to me. I'm very fortunate to be able to be doing this. Every day is a new and exciting day. And, hopefully the message is being heard loud and clear. I'm starting to hear a little bit from actually employers. I've had a probably about a half a dozen leaders reach out to me who follow me closely and are looking for guidance and advice on letting people go and the right way to do it and alternatives to PIPs and things around compensation issues and things like that. So it's been really amazing to kind of get that, and hopefully people are going to listen to it. People will know that they have rights. They'll stand up to it for themselves, for the next person behind them, and to not carry years or decades of regret for how they've been treated and walking away quietly.
Well, for those who are watching that aren't on LinkedIn or maybe don't utilize LinkedIn for networking, you can find Dan on LinkedIn. What's your website? How could somebody find you if they're needing help?
So it's a www.dangoodmanea.com. So EA is for Employment Advocacy. So dangoodmanea.com. You can sign up for services there. We've got lots of information there, videos about severances and PIPs and sharing all the information that your employer doesn't want you to know about.
Excellent. Well, thanks again for jumping on the podcast. I appreciate it. For those watching, stay kind to each other. Be empathetic. Be compassionate. Make the world, the workplace, and our communities a better place. Do your part. Doesn't take a lot. Show somebody a smile. Do what you can to be kind.